Hey, Tommy from the Run Testers, and welcome to the Points of Shoe Run Testers podcast. In this series, we answer your questions that you've sent in. So in this episode, we're talking about loads of things from old shoes and how they compare with new shoes, comparisons between different shoes that you've asked us about, and loads of other stuff. Right, let's dive in and see what questions you guys asked. Evening, Nick. How's it going?
Evening. Evening, Tom.
Nice, wet, cold, spring, almost spring evening.
Sick of it. It's just, yeah, so wet. I really didn't want to use trail shoes today. So in the forest, I popped on a pair of road shoes I wanted to keep running because I was enjoying and just thinking it must have dried out a little bit, and it was just utter slop. I've had to wash the shoes, which I detest having to do.
Yeah, I have to do that. I did a 32K across the Downs and looked out the door when I was leaving, thinking, what a lovely day it is. It's going to be great. It was just pure. I mean, my feet were completely soaked by about 1K in. So
yeah, it's been a horribly wet winter so far. Not been that cold, but it's been very wet. Hoping it relaxes a little bit in the coming days. It's still quite cold now, actually, to be fair.
I'm looking forward to at least 2 weeks of nice marathon training before I start tapering.
Well, it'll be wet right up until marathon day when it'll be 25 degrees. It'll be the first time you've run anything above 10 degrees.
In Boston, it'll be... Rains every year, doesn't it, in Boston?
It could be pretty hot in Boston as well, yeah. It's always quite extreme somehow.
Well, I'm holding out for Valencia Marathon now, summer training. It's a bit annoying one, really, isn't it? Because the bulk of your training is actually in October.
Yeah, it's good. That's a good time because it's usually still quite warm here then, I think.
Yeah.
Of late. It's been definitely the best time to train, I think.
I prefer the middle of summer. Sweating it out.
Well, Berlin's good for that. Yeah, that is true.
All right. Well, second Points of Shoe podcast.
Points of Shoe's back by popular demand.
Yeah, we had a few emails from people with some quite good questions, actually. So thank you very much if you sent an email in.
Very good questions. I thought the emailed ones.
Yeah, I opened the emails like, this is exactly what we're looking for. Perfect. Yeah. All right, well, let's jump into the first question. So this is from Edward, and he's asking if you are reviewing a running shoe that was shoe of the year 10 years ago, how would we review it today?
Yeah, it is a good question. This it's quite fun to think about, especially with racing shoes, because back then it would have been a racing flat, and Tom in particular would have hated them because he only uses very cushioned shoes and would never have used things like the Nike Streak and all those. But cushion shoe-wise, I was probably quite into the Saucony Triumph ISO line at that point. I thought that was a really good shoe. I was only 10 years ago, I was only just starting running. So I hadn't really, you know, done very much at all. So the Triumph ISO I was using for races, just getting into the sport, and I really liked. I thought that was a really good shoe. I think that was the start of a kind of slight focus on, probably it was about this time people started really obsessing about foams a bit, because the Ultra Boost and TPU beaded foams were the new coming thing. And basically everything was a fair bit heavier, I would say. And I remember talking to Asics early on. They were going on about, we finally made a shoe that's under 300 grams kind of thing. A cushion shoe is under 300 grams. It's like, oh, okay, well, now shoes are like, you know, 50 millimeter stack height and they're 250 grams kind of thing. So I think the racing and the speed shoes wouldn't do very well if we were reviewing them today, it's fair to say. I don't think any real racing flats have come out of late. And if they have, people have been interested in them, but more as a novelty. I think some of the cushion shoes held up quite well, I'd say.
Yeah, I think there's probably... Obviously, when it comes to race shoes, it's a completely different world these days. And I mean, what shoe are we looking at? You'd even throw in the Kinvara, maybe, wouldn't you? As one of the racier options back in those days.
I think you'd have some quite fun, actually, lightweight trainers. Like the Pegasus at that point would have been a lighter shoe, a much more of a. They'd probably been a bit firmer. It would have been kind of your standard EVA foams. And you know, nowadays, if you make a shoe with just an all EVA midsole, people just dismiss it out of hand, kind of thing, don't they? If it's not super critical or something else.
Well, you can sort of get away with it. I mean, there's certain shoes out now, even like the New Balance, you know, more V3, more V4. It's not a particularly amazing technological feat. It's just got loads of, you know, thick foam in it. So I imagine there's a few shoes like the ISOs and stuff that were about, which probably aren't that far off, really, what you're going to get from it. But
I don't think cushion shoes have changed that much. I think if you... You know, the Triumph ISO would probably stand up pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I think we prefer the new Triumphs. But
yes.
But yeah, certainly if you were coming to a racing, and there's no such thing as like the Saucony Endorphin Speed, like all rounder shoe with a plate and the lightweight foam that does everything. Like,
yeah.
Before you kind of all rounders were pretty you know, standard neutral shoes that you could do a bit of stuff on. So we'd probably say they're a bit dull. I think that's how we review them.
Yeah, well, I was having a look. I was trying to find out what shoes, because I started running in 2008. And I think for the first 10 years of my running, I probably didn't have a good pair of shoes. I think I was racing in like some sort of, early Mizuno Wave Rider or something like that, which was definitely not a race shoe. But I was having a look at some of the shoes that are out. So you've got like the Saucony Kinvara 5, the Brooks Glycerin 12, that was out in 2014.
Okay. Don't think I've done that one.
Of course, the Ultra Boost, which was probably the most technologically advanced shoe around at the time. I think I raced in that a few times.
So it was probably even before the Triumph. When the Saucony Triumph got this Everrun midsole, I was excited by that. I liked the Everrun midsole, which I think was maybe a TPE, I can't remember now. But yeah, I know you look back with fondness, but it's quite different even 5 years ago when I guess the Pegasus Turbo was probably popping up, and you know, that's a shoe that we'd be pretty happy to see come out today. So
Peg Turbo, well, yeah, even that, I suppose now if you got it, it depends what it was marketed as, but if it came in as like a, you know, Hockermack X type thing, it might do pretty well. I tested it recently, didn't I? For that versus we did with, what did we do it with? The Peg Turbo Next Nature.
I dug mine out and it wasn't quite as good as I remembered it, because I remember it being absolutely blown away. But the original, the second one, I don't think was as good looking back. Yeah, I mean, it was still pretty all right. I mean,
Well, that was the first proper shoe I had. I think that was the first time I'd worn a shoe which was designed with performance in mind.
Well, this is when you were in your phase of your training was to race a run-through race every single weekend throughout the year.
Yeah, classic training method. Yeah.
Tom, how many medals have you got, do you reckon, from those?
From run-throughs or all races?
Run-throughs.
Run-throughs. I must have about 150 run-throughs in a bag somewhere.
Yeah. God.
Got me a sub-40, though.
I mean, at what cost?
Well, a lot of money.
A lot of money and not doing any real training until like 2 years ago, when you then realised you were really quick.
A lot of travelling across the other side of London every Saturday, Sunday,
Greenwich
Wednesday.
Park this weekend, the worst one. Can't wait.
All right. So that's a good question. That more like that, please. I'd like to have a bit of discussion on these. Okay, so this is from Peter. It's quite a long one, this one, so I might paraphrase it slightly. But he's saying, what shoes would you recommend for tempo miles or speed workouts, like intervals, while training for a half marathon or a marathon? He says, there's plenty of great information out there on daily trainers and race day shoes, but now I'm looking for something to fill out my rotation. On 2 days a week, I'm running at least part of my run much faster, but still doing 8 to 12 miles total. He has used past race shoes for this, but ideally he wants to save his carbon fiber races for race day. What sorts of shoes would we look at in this category?
Well, these are the shoes I love the most, because that's what I do a lot. I very rarely will just do a pure easy run. Well, no, not so much anymore, but if I'm doing lower mileage, most of the time I'll be doing an easy to steady run, and I'll be finishing not far off marathon pace, that kind of thing. So this is where super trainers do really well. I think, you know, the Endorphin Speed, the Adidas Boston 12 are really good for that, because they are comfortable for your easy stretches, but they've got a bit of pace there. Or in the non-plated area, then the lightweight but cushioned shoes like the Hokamak 6 and the New Balance Rebel V4, even the Nova Blast can do a bit of speedy stuff, but I'd prefer the Mach 6 or the Rebel. I think, yeah, those are really good shoes, but typically I do so much of that kind of training. That's exactly why I like something like the Endorphin Speed so much, because it's perfect for that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I up until 2 years ago, I didn't really do tempo runs. I did.
You're just doing your run throughs every day.
I just did run through. This was after my run through stage. No, this was. I used to just, my only training would be easy runs, and then occasionally a very rare speed session on a track or something like that. But last 2 years, I've really, a lot of my runs, or at least two of my runs a week, have tempo elements in them. So definitely, it's an area that I do use a lot of. I've got a bigger pile of shoes now, which I pick for those things. And yeah, more often than not, depending on at what point in my training I'm at, how much help I need to do it. So if I've got a session tomorrow, which is really tough session, I'm going to be using an old race shoe for that. Well, I say old race shoe. We've got loads of ones that I've, you know, barely used, but I'll be using a race shoe for it basically, because I need as much help as I can get at the moment. But yeah, I mean, I would Hockermack X, I've actually been pulling out more frequently now for some of those longer runs. Obviously, the speed, all the speeds I'd take out. Super Blast is an interesting one, because I would if it was a really long session. So if I was doing like a, you know, 24, 26 kilometer run and there were tempo elements in it, I might use the super blast for that. If it was a shorter tempo session, I probably wouldn't use that just because I'd want something a little bit faster. Mm. But yeah, there's probably, I mean, there's loads of great shoes for it now. That I would
yeah, definitely. This is definitely a well catered to area of the market for sure. And yeah, Superblast is good. If I was Superblast, I almost like to use it. So if I'm just near home and I'm staying on the loop near my house, which is, you know, slightly hilly, quite busy, you know, a few turns, I find the Superblast just a little bit unwieldy compared to some of the smaller ones.
Yes.
You know, just but yeah, that's another good option for it for sure if you're on like pretty nice flattish areas with open spaces to run. But yeah, like it's kind of thing. Like I said, I do a lot of that in my training. My coaches always really like those kind of runs, and it's, you know, quite different to the idea of, you know, having an 80-20 split or something like that where you're just doing 20% fast. There's a lot more kind of pushing yourself to steady pace and steady efforts in my training, which I think is quite good for marathon training.
Well, it's definitely it's a higher level of marathon training, because I never used to have them when I was training for like sub three. I didn't really have them in it, but now I do consistently have those bits in them all the time now. And it does change what shoes you choose for that, because if I was just doing easy runs all the time, pretty easy which shoes I'd pick most of the time. But now I need a bit more thought into it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think about routes as well. It's a bit annoying.
yeah. Okay, that's a very good question. Thanks, Peter, for that. More like that, please. And then we had another one, which is, we sort of covered this when we did our January podcast where we talked about the future of running shoes, where we talked about what we expected to come up over the next year or so. So Adam says, the seemingly established template for a marathon super shoe and companies tinkering with around the edge with the shapes, etc. Where is the next big leap? Where would you see a super shoe in 5 years' time? Or is it that it is for the next 10 to 20 years until a big leap is established? And if so, what would that leap be? Whew, quite a weighty question there. Let's tackle it in two parts. 5 years' time, what we're thinking is super shoes going to look like?
5 years, I think they're going to look quite similar, Tom, if I'm honest. I think there might be a few brands who try the Mizuno angle a bit more, where they essentially, you know, skirt the rules by making the midsole 55 millimeters in height in the middle, but at the heel, it's, you know, within legal limits, and they try and add foam that way. Otherwise, I think you're going to see a lot of, we've got a new foam, it's a better foam, and brands basically just trying to say that their foams are better. Yeah. And I think, and then there might be some decent foam advances, but in 5 years, I don't think that we're going to see a leap like we saw from, you know, nothing to the Vaporfly, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe further down the line. Anyway, what do you think? We'll come on to more in the future in a minute.
I think there's going to be a lot of brands trying stuff out, and you know Puma's every time Puma brings out one of the new ratios, everyone's looking at it going, what is this? How is this going to work? Why has he got that on it? I don't think a lot of that is going to last stand the test of time. I think there's a lot of like interesting innovations going on, but ultimately, even with the Mizuno, I think the Mizuno is a fantastic shoe, love it, but even then I would not use it for a marathon over like my Alpha Flyers or my Saucony Endorphin Pro 3. It's just because it's a bit of an awkward shoe. It's a fun shoe. I really like it. I did half marathon. No, I did 5K and a depart run the other day. And I did find it quite a hard shoe to really get a nice feel from. I don't think it's going to become a mainstream shoe, basically. So I think in 5 years, we're going to see all sorts of things like weird shapes and all these different things coming out. But ultimately, I think the actual top five super shoes that are out in 5 years are going to look similar. It's going to come down to materials, isn't it? It might have the lightest upper, it might have a really, modified midsole foam that is obviously going to be as bouncy as it can be, or is going to be as light as it can be. But I don't think it's going to be massively different from what we're seeing here.
Light shoes definitely seems to be a little bit of a thing now. Since the Pro Evo 1 came out and was well under 200 grams, Asics' new shoes are under 200 grams. Yeah. So maybe there'll be a bit more push for that. But I think long-term, we're going to see brands attempt to do this. Now, it might not be possible because I have attempted it before, but a lot more personalization. I think there's a lot of research in the area that shows how people respond to different carbon plates, different styles of carbon shoes. And the difference there is actually much bigger than the overall benefit you get from the shoe. So I'm sure with elite athletes like Kipchoge, they're tuning the shoes to them. They're working out exactly what they need, and brands will hope to try and make that you know, we've got that bit with the like Asics is two different shoes and every brand has two different shoes, like one bouncy one, one slightly more light and tippy forward. And I guess there'll be more of that and people will start to really work out what they like. And that'll probably be the way they go because it's less about what's the best carbon shoe and what's the best carbon shoe for you will be the push. Yeah. But it's going to be a hard thing to do without, you know, people getting into a lab and having biomechanics tests. And
yeah.
There's no universal answers of biomechanics because people's gait is a very personal thing.
Yeah, and it's also very much driven by the market as well, isn't it? So you could create the most amazing shoe of all time.
Yeah.
But if it's going to cost £500 to have a personalized version of it, that's not going to be the most prevalent shoe around. It's going to be the thing. I mean, there's got to be a limit to how much shoes are going to cost within 5 years. But who knows? Yeah, who knows? If somebody creates a shoe that makes you 20% faster and it costs a grand. You
know. I feel like, you know, we're not really in the area for those leaps now because it's the foam technology really, you know, blew up. They're already creating foams that are returning 80-90% of energy. I don't know what a foam, you know, I don't think you're going to, I don't see a massive change apart from maybe the person say, or the rules will be abandoned.
All right. Well, that's probably where it comes into 10 to 20 years time.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to work out, but by that time, they're probably going to have some technology in that actually does something. As opposed to just being like reactive mid-cell foams and stuff, actually having I imagine them that by that point, the technology that is available, you'd hope you could actually have running shoes that have some sort of mechanics in them that actually do stuff for you based on your running.
Nanobots, like you're thinking, are you? Thinking nanobots, is it?
I'm thinking nanobots. Yeah, yeah. I often think nanobots. It's got to be something like that. Because even if it, maybe not for race shoes, but for fun shoes, I mean, you could do anything, couldn't you?
You could do spring-loaded nanobots.
And I'd take that.
Yeah, Tom would, yeah. As long as the nanobots were sufficiently cushioned, Tom would like that, yeah.
I've got to be cushioned nanobots, yeah. Well, they might react to how you want your shoe to. You could change the cushioning of your shoe.
I think we've got an idea. Maybe we should put this podcast out. We should start marketing this and investigating.
I don't think we've got any interest in actually putting any effort in to work that out. Nah. That's another excellent question. Thank you, Adam. They're the big ones. I've got some easier ones now to chat through. So we've got one here, which is Magnify Nitro 2 and the Puma Velocity Nitro 3. Are these shoes stable?
Pretty stable. I think the Magnify Nitro is a bit wider. Probably it's slightly higher, but I think it's probably the more stable of the two. Got a wider base. Velocity is quite a narrow shoe. I think for lots of people that will mean it doesn't feel that stable, potentially.
I agree. I think the Magnify is probably one of the most stable of those quite cushioned options from running shoe brands. The foam's quite dense and sturdy. Yeah, definitely a nice stable shoe for me. And yeah, the Puma Velocity Nitro 3, I did mention this in the review that I do think it feels slightly softer than the 2. So isn't as stable for me as the Puma Magnify Nitro 2. I'm trying to remember all the names of my Puma shoes here. But in comparison to a lot of other shoes of that ilk, I think it's still very stable and solid shoe.
Yeah, it's a pretty traditional setup for a shoe. I don't think it's particularly wobbly underfoot, but it's not a stability shoe. But yeah.
No. Okay, got one here, and I cannot pronounce the name of the person, but and that's not because of where they're from or anything, it's just a load of letters randomly generated. So this question is for me, basically. Watermelon socks I want, where are they from? Those are my Brav watermelon socks. I've got a couple of pairs of Brav socks and I absolutely love them because they're nice balance of they're not too light, they're not too padded, they're just like perfectly sit in the middle. I use them for races all the time, and that colorway for the watermelon ones goes brilliantly with most of my super shoes now, because most of my super shoes end up being either purple or pink these days. So
purple, it's true, I suppose. We've just white ones now.
Yeah,
might clash with the Asics if you get it. That kind of burnt red it has might not.
Yeah.
Luckily,
I have no interest in fashion whatsoever. As anybody who's watched the channel will know. But so this is a rare occasion where somebody's commented on my clothes saying that they look quite nice. But there you go, they're Brav watermelon socks. Okay, what's this one I've got here? So this is, we have covered, I think you did a video on this, but this was off the back of another video that we did. But Vaporfly versus Alphafly, I'm assuming the most recent versions, Vaporfly 2 and the Alphafly 3. Why would you buy one over the other?
We got full video on the channel for this. I'd say if you want the lightest possible shoe, the nimbler shoe, the Vaporfly is that. I think you get a bit more pop off the pods on the front of the Alphafly. I think it's got a slightly more aggressive ride. It's not that much heavier. I think it helps you lock into a race pace a little bit better as well. So in the past, you know, it's been a bit more kind of Vaporfly is maybe better short distance race, Alphafly better long distance. I think they're both great at all distances with these new versions, but I think the Alphafly Pre has a bit more punch. Vaporfly is a lot cheaper though, and it's easy to find in sales and still a very good shoe. Slightly concerned about durability on the Vaporfly 3. Mine's been okay, but Tom, you've had trouble with the rubber on the outsole, I know, and other people have as well, so Alphafly might have a bit more durability to it as well.
Definitely. Well, if you're talking about the Alphafly 3 and the Vaporfly 2,
Vaporfly 3.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've ripped the bottom of the Vaporfly 3s off in like 10K, and I've not had that problem. I've done about 60K or something in the Alphafly now, and I've not had any problems at all on it, Alphafly 3. So definitely durability difference on those. And I have ripped the bottom off of the earlier Alphaflies.
Yeah, you did, the Alphafly 1s. Yeah, I remember the very first time you used it.
Yeah, but for me, I would say, I mean, I much prefer the Alphafly these days to the Vaporfly, and it's just because it's just bigger, more cushioning, feels a bit bouncier. Prefer the Alphafly 1 to the Alphafly 3, but I think it just really comes down to that, the feel you want from the shoe. I think people who really like lightweight feeling, leaner, nimbler shoes, I'm going to get on with the Alphaflies, which is going to get on with the Vaporfly. I think that's really the difference there.
Yeah. Oh, the Vaporfly 3 is not quite as aggressive feeling as some of the other ones, but it's still really, really quick. I mean, I wouldn't, if you have either on, you're probably going to have a pretty good race. I wouldn't worry about it too much. It's, well, I've said it's quite a lot of carbon shoes these days. It's like, they're all really good. Yeah.
Okay. I can't answer this one because I haven't got either of the shoes, but would you take the Max 6 over the Rebel V4? So this is a bit of a precursor because you haven't done a video on this yet.
Video will come when we've got enough testers in. I think I've tested both these shoes now and both very, very good. I would say, having done quite similar runs in both of them, at the moment I'm leaning towards the Rebel. I think it's got a slightly better foam feeling. The foam feels a bit better to me, a bit bouncier. Like, I was surprised actually. I think the Max 6 I took for very, I've done identical kind of easy to steady 15 milers in them as well as other runs, and I think I'd probably just give it to the Rebel. I think it's weird. It's quite a big shoe and it feels quite large and wide on the foot in like a supportive way while still being really light. It's lighter than the Mac. And I think if you're looking for the kind of non-plated all-rounder shoe, it probably just has the edge for me at the moment. I'm going to do probably a little bit more of testing before we do the video. But at the moment, I'd lean towards the Rebel. I think it's, but they're both pretty great shoes. I think I wouldn't be worried about taking either of them again. I think they're got a lot of similarities as well, pretty more similarities and differences.
Okay. Right. So last question is a bit of a discussion one. Why don't we cover more cheap kit or shoes?
So we do basically sometimes. It's mostly in the monthly roundup we get this comment. It's like we'll stick in the latest bit of Saw kit or, you know, a Gore jacket I've got lined up, and it's really expensive. Generally, when we cover, I think we've said quite a lot of times on the channel, cheap kit is good stuff you can find. You can go to Decathlon and get pretty reliably good stuff. You can go to Sports Shoes and get the higher state stuff, and it's all pretty solid. But I broadly think it is more useful potentially and more interesting to cover the more expensive stuff that is a big decision to buy. If you're gonna spend £300 in a jacket, is it actually any good, that kind of thing? And that's more or less what, well, it's just, it's hard to say for sure, but when we do videos on cheap stuff, we have done them, they never do very well. And all the videos on the more expensive stuff are more popular. So I guess it kind of, the audience goes for that. And that makes me think that they'd rather have more information about those products. And I also, it is less of a risk to go and spend £30 on a Decathlon jacket than to splash out £250 on a Gore jacket. So you almost need more information about the latter. But we do cover it a fair bit, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the monthly roundup, I've been picking up stuff from Decathlon and Sports Direct and stuff recently that I've been testing and trying to add some of that stuff in. But I think it really does come down to if a lot of the stuff that we cover, because we don't review everything, like we're not doing reviews of every t-shirt that we get. We're only telling people about the really good ones. So we're basically picking out stuff that is worth spending money on if you do want to spend money on it. So from that point of view, if you're going to go and spend, look at like Tracksmith things, if you're going to go spend £80 on a running top, you're probably going to be checking online to see if it's worth spending £80 on.
Yeah.
If you're going to spend £5 on, you know, a pair of socks from Decathlon, you're probably going to spend £5 on a pair of socks from Decathlon anyway, because yeah, you know, they're fine. They're fine. But
yeah,
very rarely will I pick up a, you know, some stuff from Decathlon and go, I really need to tell everyone about these things, because they're just fine. They're like, they're worth, they're what you get what you're paying for.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely a, we're basically, when it comes to kit, we only really bring up the things that we really want to tell people about. Whereas with running shoes, we will cover the good and the bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kit's more of a thing. Like we all do write a fair bit about kit for our, in our main jobs on like websites, yeah, and stuff, where I have a bit more of a range of price points. But yeah, the monthly kit thing, we do like three picks. Yeah. And if we're doing the best running jackets, and I just want to tell you about the two that I've liked testing the most.
Yeah.
They probably will be quite expensive, because running jackets can make quite a big difference, especially if waterproof ones. They feel a lot better if they tend to be pricier ones. Although we did do a best cheap running jackets video. No one watched it. And then on shoes, we don't. So my view on running shoes is the best cheap running shoes are last gen shoes reduced, yeah, that were already, you know, quite good shoes, you know, that cost maybe 100 quid more, and then they get reduced to 30-40. That is, I think, the best way to get a bargain running shoe. Very occasionally we come across one that is a genuine like bargain, like the High Estate Soil Shaker trail shoe was always 20-30 quid, really, yeah, solid shoe, and or the Reebok 75 quid shoe. But for the most part, we don't go and buy the 20 quid shoe that Decathlon says is good to use once, yeah, a week for 5k, because it's, I don't think it's really our audience, for one. And also, I think, like I say, yeah, the best shoes, I think, are the older shoes that have been reduced.
Well, generally, when companies produce running shoes, they go, the company itself probably has them set up in different segments, don't they? Yeah. This price point gets this foam. This price point gets, yeah, a foam that's more expensive. This price point gets the really expensive foam. Mm. So unless you're looking in the sales, which sort of ruins that whole model, because you could get a shoe that has the best foam in that has gone down to like £60.
Yeah.
But if you're actually getting when they first come out, that's generally how they are allotted. So I know my friend was using the, I think, the Nike Downshifters or something like that, which we never cover on the channel.
Yeah.
Which is essentially, if you bought that new, I think it's not the cheapest shoe in the world when you get it new, but it's definitely a quite a bit below the next level up, which would be something like, you know, the Zoom Flies and those sorts of shoes and,
yeah,
and Pegasus, things like that. So, and there's a big difference in the actual materials that are used in those shoes. And you, yeah, really, you really do notice it. Cause my friend's just got his first proper pair of running shoes, I'd say, which is the Puma Velocity Nitro 2.
Yeah.
And even from using the Nike Downshifter to the Puma Velocity Nitro 2, which I think actually worked out cheaper because he got the older model. He says it just feels incredible because he's been running these downshifters for ages. So there is a big difference in that sort of quality. And we don't tend to review a lot of the cheaper ones because, one, they probably aren't going to be as good, and we're just going to every time go, you know, they're not as good as these other shoes. But also, brands don't really want us to test them. They don't.
The way I view the channel is like the thing I like about YouTube is it always harks back to the days of Wheel magazines, or magazines where it was a magazine to serve every interest. And I think we serve a niche. We are quite committed runners. I think the audience like are really into running. They want shoes that are going to use regularly for running, and a lot of those other shoes are built more for the kind of, yeah, it's a good shoe, you can wear it a bit, you might want to do a couple of 5Ks a week, and yeah, that's, you know, it's fine. But we are, you know, in this job, which is why, well, not but in our channel, well, I like it so much, we're aiming at very, you know, quite people who like running a lot, and they want to know about running shoes they're going to run in a lot, and
yeah,
those tend to be just slightly different. And the best cheap shoes for that, like I say, are the older versions of shoes that have come down in price. So
yeah, there are a lot of good ones of those. But I would even say to any of my friends who started running and they're getting into it, and they're getting up to 10Ks and they're signing up to races and things, don't get a cheap shoe. Get a shoe that is, you know, people know is good. Because that's, yeah, going to have a massive. I remember when I started running, I went to Shoe Fair, and I picked, yeah, up a pair of Nike trainers. I don't need the running trainers.
But no, definitely weren't.
I had them for like 2 years, and they must have worn. I think they're like 18 quid, and I must have worn them down to like hardly any midsole foam. I'd love to like find out what those shoes were, because they must have been so bad for me.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly. It would be all about shin splints stuff, and they start out. So, well, part of it might be, you know, might be. I actually had this very similar experience to you, where my friend asked me for a shoe recommendation, and he was talking all about different needs, and I went, oh, I don't think he's, I'm not sure. I'm just going to get the Puma Velocity Nitro 2, and he, yeah, like on his Strava, he's like, oh, I can't believe it took me so long to get a running shoe. And he was running in running shoes before; they just weren't very good ones, but Yeah, I'd say that it is a good place to start, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, we do. You know, if we find something that's cheap and good, we will tell you about it on the
yeah,
channel.
Yeah, we definitely do. We're often banging on about Decathlon. I think also, you know, it's a bit of a stunt video to go, look, we've got the £20 shoe from Decathlon. Is it as good as the £100 shoe? It's like, well, we'll just review the shoes that people are likely to actually want to buy to use a lot of running.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I do have one more question, actually, Tom. I'm going to slip it in.
Oh, yeah.
I know people ask me a lot, actually, in the recent videos, is if I show the Garmin I'm using, what's the strap? I would say it's like a nylon blue strap off eBay. I would 100% be only looking for straps on eBay or Amazon, you know. Basically, if you go to eBay and look for Garmin strap, type in the model, type in the width, 26 millimeters for the X models, 22 for the others. Mm. You'll find a nice range of colorful straps. You can find them all, you know, send them from China. Just get your order in, forget about it. 2 weeks later, a nice strap pops up on your doorstep. It costs you £1.50 or £2. And yeah, that's what I use at all times on my watch.
Yeah, I buy them from Amazon as well. I bought a Velcro one for like 15 quid the other day.
You're going to mark up on Amazon. Amazon, they're doing the exact same thing. They're just marking it up because they're selling it from the UK. So if you've got the time, you buy them direct from China.
I have no time. Can't bother that.
yeah, he's a busy man. He needs his new straps. But I mean, the Garmin nylon ones are really, really nice as well. But they're like 50, 80 quid, and there's only two colours. And I like, you know, I like my light blue, my teals.
Yeah, yes, you do. I think we all know that. All right, well, that about wraps us up for another Points of Shoe. So as always, if you have a question you want, send us an email at team@theruntesters.com and put Points of Shoe in your subject line. And as we said last time, if it's a question that is useful for people like the general audience, we're more likely to cover it. If it's you talking about a specific thing that you've had with a shoe, we might not cover it. But thanks for listening. And yeah, we'll catch you next time.
See you later. Thank you. Bye.
This episode of the podcast was presented by Tom Wheatley and Nick Harris-Fry. It was produced by Tom Wheatley. The music was by Fear of Tigers.